I'm Dan Carell with DCA Card Links, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if this podcast is helpful to you, come join us at a DCA Card Links event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. This is the second installment in our three-part series on intelligent shopping agents, an extended conversation with Sean Conahan of Wildfire Systems. In yesterday's episode, Sean laid out what intelligent shopping agents are, and when we concluded, I had just asked him how shopping, search, selection, and payment, fully integrated into AI platforms like Perplexity or ChatGPT, would affect the payments industry. Let's pick up that conversation where we left off. So, Sean, what does this all mean for the payments industry? Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com.
There are massive implications for the payments industry. There are probably 100 dimensions we could talk about, but there are at least two dimensions we can touch on here. The first and best example is the announcement last week from Visa, who announced an initiative to embed its payment network into AI tools like Perplexity, Microsoft, Anthropic, OpenAI, Mistral, and others with their what they call intelligent commerce for AI agents. Visa is conceptually aiming to give AI agents tokenized credentials to make secure purchases on behalf of users. Now, historically, payments providers have built their products around clear moments of checkout, like the point at which consumers review their purchases, select a payment method, and explicitly authorize payment. Well, to your point, without a cart, the payment experience becomes embedded directly into the consumer's interaction with the shopping agent. And that renders payment tenders effectively invisible. Now, I think this is a really important move for Visa because there's a non-zero chance that the networks and their existing monetization model could get disintermediated. And there are lots of ways that could happen. Agents could leverage blockchain or DeFi, decentralized finance systems, to bypass centralized intermediaries. A shopping agent could manage digital wallets like PayPal or just even some stablecoin alternative. Agents could seek optimal payment rails in real time, like ACH, RTP, or crypto, bypassing networks altogether. And identity and trust come into play too. Agentic AI could use decentralized identity, referred to as DID, systems and zero-knowledge proofs to verify counterparties and manage risk. And combined with AI-based fraud detection and blockchain transparency, the need for Visa, MasterCard as trust brokers could diminish. So you talk about impact to the payments industry is a lot. On the other hand, they must see this all coming, right? They read Matt Brown's paper from February of 2023 entitled Interchange is a Burning Platform. I think you've read that as well. And they realize that applying a legacy approach to a future paradigm might have its challenges. And I'm sure they have legions of people, you know, turning the ship in the right direction. Actually, I'm thinking of it, one of the most profound changes may be just in consumer psychology. Without the explicit act of adding items to a cart and checking out, consumers might make purchase decisions very differently, potentially increasing impulse purchases or shifting buying behaviors. Payment companies will have to innovate to meet that challenge, probably investing in AI-driven authentication and transaction monitoring tools and whatever to handle this new reality. So the second impact of AI on the payments industry was explored recently. It was May 20th, 2025, by partner at QED Investors and Money 2020 karaoke impresario, Amaya Scarity, if you know, you know, who pointed out that the introduction of AI into the payments realm potentially takes the traditional four-party model consisting of cardholder, issuer, merchant, and acquirer, which is really a five-party model, by the way, because the network, Visa, MasterCard, they're in the middle, and turns it into potentially an 11-party model. adding AI agents at the consumer level, doing the shopping, again at the acquiring level, and then again at the merchant level. So think about it. Today, there's a live person who buys cleaning supplies for your 100,000 square foot building or whatever. That could easily be an agent that can buy from merchant agents at N number of suppliers to get cleaning supplies at the best price, negotiating the best rates for all involved, that sort of thing. There's so many implications, not the least of which is trust. Will consumers trust agents? Will merchants trust agents to buy from them? Is the increased revenue velocity that might come from that going to be overshadowed by the potential churn introduced when actual humans claim they didn't make the purchase, their AI agent did, and then returns go way up? Is that even an issue? At this point, nobody really knows. This is all really greenfield opportunity.
It's a million things in there, but I'll comment on a couple. And this is a terrific episode opportunity to just engage in rank prognostication. And as you know, Sean, there has hitherto been no accountability for making predictions about the future because, you know, there was too much information. What is going to happen actually is that an AI tool within about 2 years is going to come back, identify the fact that I was wrong in my prediction, and I believe order my execution or at least elimination. But in any event, we're going to live large while we can. I just want to say that the thing about tech enabling anybody is it's like giving junior high kids a social media. It's like it makes us human, but only more so. And so on the question of whether there's going to be more impulse buying or less impulse buying, let me just go ahead and say some people will do more impulse buying because that's who they are. And it totally, like, eliminating friction is just a recipe for very rapid bankruptcy. Maybe that's more efficient. I don't know. But it also, like, to your point, you know, there's also going to be the people, and we've got members of our family that are on both sides of this, who would be like, yeah, well, this is my monthly budget now, and I will now never exceed it, right? Because I'm going to plug it into the thing, and the thing's going to do the thing, and then we will therefore be on budget, and we don't even have to, you know. So that's a conjecture about kind of where this ends. I also, as I listen to you, just kind of go, okay, you have multiple agents, you know, buyers dealing with multiple agent sellers. But what I would say is, yep. And once the market perfects, there's going to be an interesting age of antitrust law that we're going to be dealing with because the word multiple in there shouldn't rationally continue. In other words, there's no reason why there'd be very many suppliers once you've removed all the friction from all of the different points, right? You'd end up with a few. And we've seen manifestations of that. And there are people, only a few in DC, that are actually interested in this. I will say, for a deep poll, you know, Amy Klobuchar is a senator from Minnesota. She happens to be interested in antitrust law. Hardly anybody really is. But maybe it's coming, because I do think that this is going to grease the skids towards that. One of the things that's kind of foundational to this, though, is this issue of trust. I will say, a good friend of mine wrote a book called The Trust Revolution some years ago. I reviewed it. And I think that, and he was just getting at the, like, here are the different ways in which trust is foundational to all transactions. And he's right, right? Like, it's just an unnoticed thing that, like, we only do things where we have a certain level of trust. And so he kind of analyzed all that stuff. And so with agents, right, are consumers going to trust the thing? Or maybe that's one question I'll ask you. Or is it like, what's the path to, because I think they will eventually. So what's the path to getting to, like, well, do they trust the AI recommendations? How does you analyze this? How do you think about this?
Well, today they certainly do. One simple use case is travel. Tell Perplexity you're going to Italy for a week and you want recommendations. It'll spit out a list of places to stay, places to visit, restaurants to eat at, etc. And it saves you time doing the research yourself to build an itinerary. Now, there's a pretty low risk of a negative impact. You know, there's no reason for me not to trust that, because nothing, life or death, is happening there. And I should say, as an aside, we love this sort of use case because it perfectly illustrates the Wildfire AI monetization platform, little plug there, which enables the creators of such shopping tools to run all their results through the Wildfire platform so that recommendations are affiliated and monetized. So if a user clicks on a link to book a hotel you recommended, great, now you can easily monetize it. But anyway, I will further argue that trust is actually a non-issue for consumers in the long term, too, because we can decide where it gets applied. There was a time when people didn't trust entering their credit card online because it felt insecure. Now that's no longer a thing.
My mom is quite sure that you're wrong and that you should not do this.
Yeah, well, I think we have a collectively myopic view of what the future may look like based on what the present looks like.
Yeah.
we think an AI agent is just going to make recommendations to us, which I think is going to seem really quaint in a year or two. And I agree that me currently typing into a chat interface, buy me a green sweater, is fraught with risk because, like I said before, there are myriad shades of green. There are myriad styles of sweater. But these agents are going to learn over time, and they have memory, and they'll be able to autonomously buy me a thing the same way that a friend of mine can look at two similar items and determine which one I would like the most based on what they know about me, if I were the king of Damascus and had people around me that were able to do that. Anyway, the real issue regarding trust is that it has to be applied across the entire stack. It's not just about consumers. Jack Forrestal, the chief product and strategy officer at Visa, put it well a couple of weeks ago at the Visa Payments Forum while talking about the Visa Intelligent Commerce for AI Agents. He said, quote, "Soon people will have AI agents browse, select, purchase, and manage on their behalf. These agents will need to be trusted with payments, not only by users, but by banks and sellers as well." So an agent making a product recommendation is one thing, but it's a much bigger thing for an agent to have access to my money and spend it on my behalf. A good way to evolve trust is to let consumers give their agents an allowance, like you mentioned before, that it can't exceed when shopping for you. On the merchant side, it's a similar issue. Who assumes the liability for compromised or rogue agents? And I think maybe the networks, Visa, MasterCard, are in a good spot to play the role of trust broker there. But we need to think beyond what we can see now and assume that the technology and the use cases will leapfrog our current thinking. Instead of a recommendation that I might or might not trust, I expect the technology to know so much about me that my hyper-personalized demand curve will be accurate. So I think the real question is, are consumers going to trust shopping agents to autonomously execute purchases on their behalf, spending their actual money? And I believe the technology will evolve to a point where they absolutely will. Brands and platforms, for their part, can build trust by offering clear distinctions between AI-generated recommendations and maybe human-verified information, adding transparency into how recommendations are made. But ultimately, consumer confidence will come from giving users control. Let them easily validate an AI recommendation, verify sources, or seamlessly escalate to human assistance when required. And over time, as reliability improves and transparency hopefully continues, I think the convenience of AI-assisted shopping should outweigh the fear of hallucinations.
That sounds all correct to me. And in a way, I'll pull us back to like a broader or like a wider lens, which is, on the one hand, you're preaching to the choir, I think, on all of that. I think the efficiency and the rationalization, it's ripe for it to happen. On the other hand, I live up in, I go to Chicago for warm weather vacations. I live in St. Paul. And we have the, and not coincidentally, Minnesota wasn't the Mall of America, but it was a different mall, but it was the first indoor mall in the world. And we still have that stuff. And so the Mall of America, I think, is, you know, it's successful, but they're like expanding it, whatever. And so merchants, and I don't just mean brick and mortar, but like merchants, both brick and mortar and virtual, are still very much a thing. There's still a ton of infrastructure that, you know, that you could regard as, you know, irrational or excessive or not necessary or whatever. That's still, like, I'm sure many people's careers will still ride those arcs for a while anyway. And so how would you think like merchants overall are going to be disrupted by this? Because again, it like seems so fundamental to a lot of what's going on.
Merchants will be significantly disrupted. But now that I think about it, first, let's take a detour here. I want to give a quick primer on Model Context Protocol, or MCP, because it's a cornerstone that enables all of this to happen for merchants. So something quietly seismic happened in November of 2024. Anthropic open sourced the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, which their website gives a very clear definition of. It is, quote, "a new standard for connecting AI assistants to the systems where data lives, including content repositories, business tools, and development environments. Its aim is to help frontier models produce better, more relevant responses." So in the agentic world, MCP is essentially the cognitive scaffold that lets large language models operate like a mind with memory and tools and goals. Paul Palmieri at Grit Capital put it in simpler terms in a blog post in May of 2025. He said, MCP is, quote, a kind of common language that lets different AI models talk to each other with shared rules for how they carry and remember information. And he goes on to point out that in a reimagined world of commerce, quote, MCP adoption enables the creation of services that may call one model for inventory, another for sales prediction, and another for warehouse management, all feeding a single innovative platform where the combination of value meets the demands of an ideal customer profile with a complex, multi-layered problem to solve. So sometimes a thing gets built that everyone agrees is the foundational piece that was missing because it's so fundamentally useful, and MCP is one such thing. It's akin to APIs in the modern era. And so there's no wonder that the likes of OpenAI, Shopify, Instacart, Klarna, Expedia, Visa, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, like all of these companies have incorporated MCP into their stacks. So anyway, now on to your question about disruption at the merchant level. I've thought a lot about this. We've had extensive conversations internally, and we've identified at least five key areas of disruption for merchants. So first up is search and discovery. In the traditional model, users search with Bing or Google, browse websites, compare products. With MCP-enabled AI, users say, I want a six-person easy up tent for weekend camping for less than $200. And the shopping agent interprets the intent, recalls your past preferences, queries shopping APIs, and recommends a few targeted options with no website visits required by the human. So the impact is that A, merchants lose traffic from paid and organic search. B, SEO, UX design, visual merchandising, they all become less relevant. And then C, product data quality and structured metadata become critical for discovery via AI. The second area for potential disruption is the purchase funnel. In the traditional model, purchase flow involves landing pages, carts, upsells, cart abandonment, retargeting, etc. With shopping agents, the model can initiate and complete a transaction inside the conversation using APIs or partner integrations like Stripe or Visa's AI tools. It can also autofill payment preferences, apply discounts. It can remember your past purchases. So this is super disruptive because merchants literally lose control of the purchase funnel. Cross-selling, brand experience, cart-based upselling, all of that erodes and power shifts to platforms that host the AI agents, not the stores themselves. Number three on my list is brand loyalty. So what happens when consumers become loyal to the AI layer and not the merchant? In the traditional model, we have human-centric loyalty programs, email marketing, and personalized homepages to retain customers. But in the future, your shopping agent remembers what you like, when you reorder, how you prefer to shop. The AI, not the brand, becomes the loyalty interface. So users literally might say, order my usual vitamin supplements and never even remember the brand. And the disruption here is obvious. Merchants risk becoming invisible back-end suppliers, diminishing brand equity unless it's surfaced by the AI. Number four on my list is platform shifting. This is really about redefining the gatekeepers. Today, Google, Amazon, and Meta dominate product discovery and ad spend. In the future, we're discussing OpenAI, Anthropic, and Perplexity become new commerce gatekeepers. Their models, powered by MCP and shopping integrations, determine which products are shown and why. One of the biggest impacts here is that paid ad models shift from display and PPC models to performance-based marketing. After all, shopping agents don't have eyeballs and they're not clicking on ads. Monetization is a huge topic. I want to come back to that actually a little bit later. But so let me just finish out this list here with the fifth area and we can come back to that. Number five is merchandising tactics. Personalized agents mean curated, goal-based shopping. In today's world, merchants guess at user needs via segmentation and A/B testing. With MCP-based agents, AI acts on your specific goals, your past behavior, and current context. For example, you're planning a trip or this is a baby registry, that sort of thing. It doesn't just show options, it actually curates an answer. And this simply means merchants must adapt to selling into conversations, not web pages. Product feeds, reviews, and metadata have to be structured and semantic ready to surface in LLM results. This means product data has to be exceptionally clear, accurate, and optimized for AI consumption, including inventory, availability, pricing, and purchasing info. It really is just a complete paradigm shift. Okay. Now, I should say that we're talking about a future that is starting to arrive now, but we are definitely still very much in the peaky part of the hype cycle. The number one use case for ChatGPT is still information retrieval research. It's basically a better search engine. Now, you and I are in this industry, so as early adopters, we've already made our first agentic purchase, and our first fully autonomous transaction will probably be within the next month or two. But the vast majority of these transactions are years away. Yes, it's true that ChatGPT alone claims 800 million weekly users. That's 10% of the global population. But agentic commerce, while certainly arriving, cannot arrive as quickly as a monolithic standalone tool like ChatGPT, because commerce is such a massively distributed and loosely federated ecosystem with so many links on the value chain. And not for nothing, e-commerce has existed for 25 years and it's still only 23% of all transactions. So yeah, now's actually a good time to mention David Roldan Martinez's 29-page white paper recently published April 2025 on the impact of MCP, wherein he outlines a strategic roadmap for organizations faced with managing this change. And in the first 6 months, he's just suggesting assess your API maturity, identify high-value MCP use cases. And then 6 to 18 months, you should be focusing on implementing foundational governance controls and standards, that sort of thing. And it really isn't until like 3 years out that he's suggesting innovative business models are even possible. His point is that organizations that figure out how to evolve correctly into this new world will have a massive competitive advantage, and those that don't are just going to be left with a mountain of technical debt. I think that's true of all companies, but certainly mostly for the merchant ecosystem. And the implication is that those who arrive sooner are going to have the greatest competitive advantage.
Yeah. You know, I as you were talking, just to pick up one thing, and I have so many thoughts as you're talking, but one is imagining talking to my grandkids, should I have them, and kind of explaining, like, you know, let's just imagine that my grandkids are teenagers and they're wearing Levi's jeans, you know, God willing, Levi's will still exist. And that, oh yeah, like back in the day, we used to buy those at Sears or whatever. And if you think about it, it's like, it will make sense to them for sure that there is a brand on the product that, for a lot of reasons, intellectual property, trademark, patents, whatever, there's a reason to imagine why products will largely, if not entirely, still have brands. It will not necessarily make sense to them. Like, their rejoinder to that comment could be, what do you mean? Not like because Sears is gone, right? But because, like, what do you mean that there's like a brand on, like, is that like the people that made them? Or is, what is that, right? Because it's not obvious in the scheme of things that you would have a brand on the layer that literally just does the transaction. Like, what is that? And as evidence of that, of course, is that, and actually, it's not a totally random example. My wife's father has spent his entire career at Sears Roebuck, as one did at the time. And of course, Sears is gone, right? And there's every reason to believe that, you know, other merchants in that, because it's such a dangerous layer of the transaction chain. And nobody thought about it at the time, right? It was the goal. When he took that job out of college, it was the gold standard for American companies. But people weren't noticing that there wasn't really a reason necessarily why merchants had to exist, right? Somebody has to make the thing. Somebody's going to own the intellectual property for the thing. Somebody is going to deliver it to your house, or maybe you're going to go get it. But like, there's not a reason why there must be a merchant as we imagine it. And I think that's just give you a way of imagining like the fundamental nature of this. And I would say that about an awful lot of links in the value chain, right? And imagine yourself coming into the industry, which I did a few years ago. I hadn't been really an industry insider to this. And just imagine when, you know, you had those moments when you're like, wait, why is there a separate thing that does this? And then we all just get used to it. You get used to the industry and you get used to the fact that it's like, well, there's one thing and there's another thing and there's another thing and another thing. Just go back to that naive state and say, like, yeah, there actually doesn't need to be that many things. And we've gotten through it to the other side. And now there maybe aren't that many things, right? One of the things that I think everybody who listens to Commerce Code is quite familiar with, though, is the multifaceted world of like the loyalty ecosystem. And I actually would say that that's not going to go away, because there's a lot of behavior, you know, human behavioral, you know, psychology, et cetera, reasons why loyalty is going to be a thing and it's going to be a part of the industry. But it might not look anything like it does now. So would love to get your thoughts on how you think loyalty is affected by this.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com.
We just covered a lot of ground with Sean on what intelligent shopping agents mean for payments, consumers, and merchants. And we left off with me asking Sean something that's at the heart of what many DCA members and Commerce Code listeners care about. What does this mean for loyalty? Wildfire Systems is a loyalty company. They know the space very well, and you'll want to tune into the third and final episode in this series to hear what Sean has to say about how ISAs are going to affect loyalty programs. Then, we'll turn to the broader marketing sector, the position of market pillars like Google and Amazon, and several other fundamentals of contemporary retail.
Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week!